Next session is entitled Important Peacemaking Issues. Sami Awad will begin addressing the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Sami is a Christian Palestinian executive director of Holy Land Trust, committed to nonviolent approaches to ending the occupation and establishing long-term peace. Here's a man that's doing it, and he's my friend. And I have another friend, Bob Roberts. This is so nice. Author of, one of the things that I like about Bob is where he and I see eye to eye is the whole concept of glocalization. And he's going to challenge us to think through, especially what pastors need to do to be peacemakers. This isn't just for NGOs. How many pastors do we have here? Please raise your hand. Oh, look at this. Okay. So, Bob, I'm going to tee it up for you. And you know what I like about Bob? He's not only committed to glocalization and help you understand what God's doing in the world, but he's a Southern Baptist who's also a radical peacemaker. Now, that sounds like an oxymoron. Yeah, come on. We should clap on that one. Sami, lead us off, brother.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Everybody's awake. Great. Well, I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very thankful. Thank you, Rick, for the invitation and the insistence. It's an honor for me to be amongst you all, and I'm very, very happy, impressed, and blessed with every presentation we have had until this point. Thank God for everything that has happened, and we'll see what happens from now on. Let me start by saying that, Tom Getman is here, and many people from the historic school of the evangelicals who have been working for so many years to see how evangelicals can get involved and how can evangelicals be a catalyst for peace in the Holy Land and for peace in the Middle East. And one of the long-standing questions was, what can we do to get them involved? I think now we could ask a different question. What do we do now that you are involved? I think we have reached the point where there is enough evangelicals, pastors, organizations, committed Christians, where we can truly make a difference. And this is the question, what can we do now? And what I want to share with you is the work that I am engaging in Palestine, in Israel, in the Holy Land, the work of Holy Land Trust, and how Holy Land Trust has also evolved over the last few years to really focus more and more and more on what Jesus wants us to do, not what also we want to do. Because many times we have our agendas, we have our good intentions, we have our desires for peace, we like things to happen, we like to see conflict end, we like to see violence end. And of course, this is God's will in our lives, but the methods and the means of achieving this are also important for us to see how Jesus wants us to move forward in this. What is the language he wants us to speak to those who are suffering? What is the language that he wants us to speak to those who are committing the suffering as well? It's very easy for us to label them, to judge them, to even demonize and dehumanize those who cause suffering. It's a natural reaction we have in us to just look at them and say how bad they are for the violence that they commit. And we always need to ask the question, is this the style of Jesus? Is this how Jesus would talk to the oppressor? And what he would talk to the oppressed as well. 13 years ago, I started Holy Land Trust as an organization. Our slogan is strengthening the communities for the future. Now I tell you, people asked me 5 years ago and 4 years ago, even 3 years ago, where did you come up with the name Holy Land Trust and where did you come up with strengthening the communities for the future? And I always blame the board. This is what the board wanted and this is what they came up with. Even though I was sitting in the meeting and we all agreed, yeah, this is a good name and this is a good slogan. But I have to tell you, it wasn't until recently that I found out why we have Holy Land Trust as a name, and why we have Strengthening the Communities for the Future as a slogan. You know, sometimes we want to be partners with Jesus in setting up the plans for us. We want to argue with him and discuss with him and negotiate with him what should happen. But sometimes we should just put our trust in accepting things, and maybe it will take 10 years after that to really understand what his intention was. And now we feel we understand. Holy Land. This is what it is. It is the Holy Land. If you're a Muslim, if you're a Jew, or you're a Christian, one thing you claim for this land is it is holy. It is sacred land. And we all believe this. This is where our Christ was born. This is where he walked. This is where the disciples walked. The prophets walked. So for all the religions of that land, as much as they fight with each other and disagree with each other, one thing they would agree on is at least the term, the concept, that this is holy, sacred land. Trust. The word trust for us has two meanings. The first is the trusting relationship. For anything to move forward, what needs to be established is a relationship of trust and respect between the peoples and the communities. Peace is not just negotiated agreements between politicians. Peace is not just a group of activists sitting together, talking, engaging in dialogue, or doing a protest every once in a while. Peace is the process of building trust and respect between the peoples of the land, to be able to see each other with different eyes, new eyes, to be able to really understand who the other is, to appreciate them, appreciate their culture, their heritage, the narrative that they bring to the table, even if this narrative, and it is in our situation, a completely different narrative than the other. Trust and respect are the foundation. So Holy Land, trust is that. But trust also has another meaning. Trust is also taken from the word trustee. Trustee means to hold on to something as a caretaker of that thing until you return it to its rightful owner. If we believe this is Holy Land, if we believe this is sacred land, then we have no ownership claim to this land. Only God has claim to this land. And we could say this for the Holy Land and the world as well. But let's start with the Holy Land, that little spot. And if we are trustees of something, we are to take care of it. We are to maintain it. We are to make it prosper. We are to make it blossom. We are to allow milk and honey to flow in it again and flow freely without restrictions, checkpoints, walls, borders, anything. So if we are trustees, we take care of it and we maintain it till its rightful owner claims it back. And that's where we're seeing now our work as the organization, Holy Land Trust. Building communities for the future. It's a beautiful statement, but the funny thing about it is that the word communities is plural. And we said it plural from the beginning. We are Palestinian. All the people that work at Holy Land Trust are Palestinian, so we could have easily said building the community for the future as a Palestinian organization working with the Palestinian community. Recently, it's come to us to understand what we are really meant to do. Building communities for the future means for us, as people who want to follow the teachings of Jesus, to look at the challenges that face all the communities of that land. Palestinian, Israeli, Jewish, Muslim, Christian, political parties, whatever they are, what are the challenges they face? And how can we who live in this land provide the answers for them to be able to free themselves and liberate themselves and have breakthroughs for the challenges that they have? It's not just about the Palestinians. When we talk about peace in the Holy Land, it's not just about standing with the Palestinians and looking at what can we do to support the Palestinians in their struggle for liberation and freedom and ending the occupation. It is for all of us, including us as Palestinians, to ask the question, what is missing within the Israeli community that does not allow them to move forward for peace? When you look at polls that are taken continuously in this land, 70%, 80% of the people want peace on both sides. What is missing? What is needed? We've been in this for 64 years now. People are getting sick and tired and bored from hearing the Palestinian-Israeli conflict being repeated over and over again. So what is missing and what is needed to move forward to once and for all end peace? Not to come at the 10th annual conference and have the same presentation and same speeches. And to say, listen, within the next 5 years, we're going to do it and we're all going to work together to really know what's missing and what's needed and bring that vision to the land. So what are the challenges that we work on as an organization? And I want to speak now, not just as Palestinians. I want to widen the circle of those who are actively involved in this work, which means you as well. The church, the evangelical community in the United States. What are the challenges that we need to engage in, look into, and begin working on? The first challenge and the biggest challenge is, of course, something called the occupation. The military occupation of Palestinians by Israel. Now, we as an organization are beginning to have a new look into what this occupation is about. Because historically, you know, if I wanted to give a 101 presentation, I would present a conflict between Palestinians and Israelis, Israelis being the more powerful, occupying the Palestinians being the victim under military occupation, as if it's a struggle between two nations who are struggling, one for liberation and one for security, and this struggle is over a piece of land. This is how it's presented. This is what the politicians speak. This is what the media speak. This is what I spoke until a couple of years ago. Now the occupation for me is different. It's not a capital O occupation. It's a small O occupation dealing with issues that concern us and concern our values as Christians, which force us to get involved, which is an occupation of how people treat each other and how people relate to each other. Issues of human rights, issues of equality, the recognition of equal rights, civil equal rights of the other to even live and be in this land, no matter what their identity is. If a Muslim says no Jews are allowed to live in this land, this is discrimination and needs to be addressed by us. If a Jew says no Muslims are supposed to be on this land, it should be taken at the same level. So instead of a political conflict that we are engaging in and always trying to position ourselves as Christians, who are we with, who are we not with, and if we want to do anything good, how could we be a bridge between those two political identities? I would challenge us to say, let us look at this differently, not for one or the other, and not even for pro-Palestinian and pro-Israel, but to say we are for pro-peace, pro-human rights, pro-equality, pro-equal distribution of resources in this land, pro the right of every religion to worship in their holy sites without restrictions on movement. It's a struggle of, I would say it's a spiritual struggle. It's a spiritual struggle between many Israelis and Palestinians who are fully committed to make peace happen, fully committed to make equality happen, fully committed to justice, and those who are not, and those who are lost in between. So we need to begin looking at this differently. And I think this is the challenge. And the beauty of this is that this is becoming an awakening for many of us who live in this land. On the 5th of October, just a few weeks from now, we are organizing a big nonviolent action. Coming from this new consciousness, from this new understanding, Jews, Christians, and Muslims walking together from outside of Bethlehem, from one of the checkpoints, into Bethlehem, into Manger Square, we're expecting hundreds, if not thousands, of people are going to be there. And this is not going to be another one of those political nonviolent protests. We're not even going to speak. It's going to be a silent protest. And we're coming with this full recognition that we all have rights in this land and we all should treat each other as equal. A new consciousness that is being developed now in this land that needs our full support and engagement. Another challenge, and this is a challenge for us that I would like to talk about, relates to the issue of identity. It was very important for me as a Palestinian to begin to understand that when my identity as a Palestinian becomes a block, becomes a hindrance for me to fulfill Jesus' request in my life and mission in my life, I need to really look back into my identity and see, am I truly living that or not? And I say this to you as well. How do you allow your identity to either be a catalyst for peace work or a block for peace work that you should be engaging in? If your identity as an American, if your identity as a Christian, if your identity representing any organization becomes a hindrance, a block, a way of looking negatively towards someone else, then I really, really challenge you to look into, even if you want to continue to carry this identity. For me, it's not about challenging myself as a Palestinian. But if I use my identity as a Palestinian to blame, to complain, to undermine, to victimize, to attack, to discriminate against the Israeli and the Jew, then I really have to look into myself and see this, if this is the identity I want to carry. Bob Roberts, for example, he goes into Muslim countries, he comes into Palestine, and is fully proud of his identity. He comes in declaring, I'm a Pentecostal, Baptist, born again, Texan, barbecue eating, cowboy boot wearing, 10-gallon hat wearing, and I love you. And how sometimes we are so afraid of living out our truth and our identity that we prevent these relationships from being built because we create assumptions about how the other will look at us. If we say we are believers, if we say we are following Christ, if we say we are Americans, if we say we're from Texas, how others begin to look at us. If we really believe and fully trust in these identities that we have, we need to use them, speak them, use them as truth, and speak them in a way that allows things to move forward for peace. Another challenge is our role as activists. We talk a lot, and we listen a lot. And the question is, when will we be able to move from talking to becoming active, to engaging in work on the ground? And this is very important. This is very challenging. Jesus was not just a preacher. He was not just a rabbi who sat in the synagogue 24 hours and spoke. He went out. He went out into the community. He healed the community. He engaged with them. He stood up with them. He prevented violence from happening when he saw violence was about to happen. And you could think of many examples, and even reaching the point of putting his life as an activist, sacrificing his life for us as well. What are the actions and activities that we are ready to engage in as the church that will be challenging? It's not about not challenging those who are engaging in violence. But it comes from a place of understanding that engaging in nonviolence also has the power of it engaging from a heart of love and compassion, even to the oppressor, and not just about exposing the injustice and engaging in revenge and retaliation. And it's not easy. It is not easy to engage in. It's taken me years now of not being even personally involved in a single nonviolent action where a few years ago, every Friday, if you come to my office, you wouldn't see me because I was out on the streets demonstrating and getting beaten up. But for me to understand, were these actions of nonviolence also aligned with what Jesus wants me to do? And if not, then what are the actions I need to do to be aligned with God's will in my life? A couple of weeks ago, I was asked by the Israeli military governor of the Bethlehem district to go and meet him for coffee. It's usually an interview about the work we are doing. And his name is Captain Rami. Captain Rami is a guy that I've known now for about 10 years. He was the captain of the Israeli Army Brigade that when we did the nonviolent actions, he would give the orders for them to beat us up, to arrest us, to hit us, to shoot at us. And many times he would point to me as a leader of an action and say to his soldiers, go get him and beat him up. And very interestingly, out of these experiences, we build a wonderful friendship. Amazing. That there was this respect between each other, even though he was giving me the orders, he was given the orders to attack me. And in this interview, he was asking me, Sammy, what are you hiding from me? It's been a couple of years now, I haven't seen you in any demonstration, any protest. What's going on? And I told him, Rami, I don't even use Captain Rami. Rami, I'm really thinking and praying, how can I really express what I want to express in a way that I could show God's love to you? 2 weeks later, which was just a few days ago, for the first time in 13 years, I got a permit to be able to go to Jerusalem and Israel. He issues these permits. I feel that was very much connected with what I said. He heard something that I think he wants Israelis to hear from me. The last thing I will end with is what I think has been the theme that has been mentioned here throughout the day, which is the issue of love. We are called to love our enemies. No matter what we think, no matter what we feel, no matter how much anger we have in us, no matter how frustrating it is, we are called to love our enemies. And for me, the biggest challenge was not just in saying I love my enemy because Jesus wants me to. It was to also understand who my enemy is in order for me to love them. And for me, as a Palestinian, as a Christian, to go to places, and I know many of you have heard this, but I want to keep emphasizing this point, the greatest experience, the most transformative experience for me has been in going to places like Auschwitz and Birkenau and understanding who my enemy is. To understand the Holocaust, to understand the suffering, to understand the pain, the trauma, and the fear that exists within the Jewish community. And the only thing you could do after that experience is love them more. Really. Have real compassion for them, a real understanding of where they came from and where they are now and what is needed for us as Christians, as following the healer of all healers. If he healed pains and traumas, what we could do in his name to heal pains and traumas as well. So healing is an important missing component of the struggle we live in. So I ask you to continue praying for us, to continue supporting us, and to continue loving the Palestinian, the Israeli at the same level. They both need our love, our compassion, and our care. And God bless you.